I'm Jason Michael Perry, man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. I'm recording this intro from sunny Las Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show, and we're working on a special edition episode, and it's going to have all the big trends that are coming out of CES, so more on that later. But today, we're jumping into something that impacts all of us, cybersecurity. When many folks imagine hacking, they have this picture in their minds of some shadowy figure on a keyboard and a hoodie writing code to break into computers, but that's not always the reality. Actually, most hacks these days start with people, and that can mean emails, texts, phone calls, messages, things that are designed to pull out urgency, cause fear, or make you trust something that you shouldn't trust. To get into this, I'm joined with Kina Williams-Karoma. She's a cybersecurity leader who's spent more than two decades working on exactly those types of problems across public and private sectors. And she helps organizations prepare for attacks before they happen. But first, let's look at some headlines that frame this moment, so stick around. If you listened to the first episode of this podcast, then you know that I'm fascinated by this simple question: what is a photo? Well, I'm not alone. This week, Adam Mosseri, who's the head of Instagram, laid out what he sees as a fundamental shift in what we're about to live through. He says we're entering a world of what he calls infinite synthetic content, AI-generated images and videos that are becoming harder and harder to tell apart from reality. For most of our lives, we could assume that a photo or a video was a reasonably accurate record of something that's happened. The assumption is gone. And as Adam points out, it's going to take us years to adapt because we're wired to trust that what we see is real. And as you hear when I start to talk with Tina, this isn't just a social media problem. It's a real threat to businesses and everyday people. Because content that we once easily spot as fake, like spam or phishing messages, now is becoming good enough to trick people into doing things like clicking links or approving payments or sharing credentials or trusting things that they just shouldn't trust. And these attacks aren't just getting better, they're also getting more targeted. Around the world, journalists, human rights activists, government employees, they've been hit with some of the most advanced attacks of all types. And increasingly, these are not just by criminals, these are by governments. And to help people who are facing these kinds of threats, a small nonprofit called Access Now has started running a 24/7 security helpline that helps people who believe they've been hacked, specifically targeting journalists. They investigate roughly 1,000 cases per year. Only a small percentage turn out to get confirmed, but when they are confirmed, the consequences can be huge. You can imagine journalists who suddenly are giving up people who are helping them with their reporting, or government officials who are sharing data that shouldn't be allowed in the public. Now, we talk about this trust problem, but the thing that's kind of crazy is that while we're worrying about hackers stealing our data, we're also giving a lot of it away for free, and sometimes without us realizing it. This holiday season, you may have noticed TVs hitting some of the lowest prices we've ever seen. Amazon, for example, is selling a 32-inch TV for under $160. And that sounds like an amazing deal. I think at one point it was down to like $120. But then you realize that these devices are starting to track your habits or sell your data. In other words, you know, cybersecurity today isn't just about hackers and hoodies breaking the systems. It's about all types of things, social engineering and other things. So as always, the links are in the show notes, but let's get into this with Tina. My guest today has spent more than 20 years dealing with this exact problem. Tina Williams-Karoma is the founder and CEO of SciDeploy and T-Secure, where she helps organizations prepare for attacks before they happen by training people, testing systems, and uncovering weak spots long before a hacker does. She's advised federal agencies, taught cybersecurity at UMBC, and built a platform focused on validating whether your defenses will actually hold up. Tina, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very excited and happy to be here.
So I don't know who first said this, but I've heard this line many times. Most attacks don't start with hacking computers. They start with hacking humans. Like, what do you think when you hear that?
So one of the most basic things people probably think about is maybe the non-technical end user, right? Like that might be a common one, clicking on stuff they shouldn't just because they're unaware. But I also think that the human part is also in the very technical users, the ones that have responsibilities for doing so much work that they start looking for shortcuts or the best way to triage to get through the day just because they're so overloaded. And I think that that can become like a big part of the problem as well. Also, I think when you think about people, there's a lot of decisions that go into how you set up a cyber program, right? The processes, the policies, the procedures. And I think a lot of that is also a people thing, right? It's especially a leadership thing. Like, how are we going to approach this? Are we going to approach cybersecurity as a, if we just buy this tool, I think we've checked the box, right? We're good. We have X big name tool, so we're good. Yeah.
I think that's an important thing to think about it. We talk a lot about policy and antivirus software, malware, you know, protection, and all of these different things.
Right.
And all of us probably have the same picture of, I don't know if you saw the show Mr. Robot, but this this hoodie-wearing, you know, super smart computer science guy who's going to hack into the world. But the thing that I always find that's so interesting is that something like 40 to 70%, and I say that because there are credential hacks and there's like social engineering hacks, together is like 60 to 70%, but like I think it's 40, 30, something like that. A lot of this happens with people hacking people. This is the biggest concern for businesses, regardless of the policies, is the way that people take advantage. This is called social engineering.
Yes.
Can you explain social engineering for us?
Absolutely. So when you're trying to find the easiest or most straightforward way to get into a system, like you have your goal. My goal is I want access to the data that X company has. Then it becomes, what's the best way in, right? If you try to just go in as yourself, it's probably not the best course of action, right? But if I can go in with somebody else that is authorized, that is going to be a sure way in. So first, let me find who is authorized, some other person. Okay, so then it becomes a question of how can I leverage this person's authorized access. And you can do that in a lot of different ways. One of the like common ones is the USB sticks, right? It might be less common now, but you know, sometimes like one approach that adversaries would take is to have these cool USB sticks given out maybe at a trade show or just kind of around as a free giveaway. Who doesn't like free? So somebody's like, hey, look at this, you know, and they just go back and plug that USB stick in, and there could have been malware loaded or as a part of that USB. As soon as it's put into the computer, then that code starts executing.
Mm-hmm. And just real quick with that, USB sticks maybe not as often today.
Yeah, not as often today.
But the same concept, the same USB port, so the thing that you're plugging your phone into and your laptop into when you're at the airport, or that random USB port that's maybe at a restaurant that you decide to use to charge, and those things work in that exact same way.
They work in the exact same way. You're just thinking, I'm just trying to get some power here.
Yeah.
I just like I'm running low on my battery. Let me just plug in here. I just put my USB in here. And people know that. Another one that I think a lot about now, like, is the trend that restaurants have for putting out their
QR codes.
No, bring me a hard menu, please. Because the way I think about it, if I were an adversary, I would just go and put my little sticker QR code on top of the restaurant's one, make it so that it goes to my site first so I can do what I want to do with the connection, and then I'll redirect you on to the correct site. But just things like that, anytime you're engaging in some technology device or URL or QR code, there is an opportunity for someone who has nefarious mindset to take advantage of your connection. And those are just things that the layperson is not thinking a whole lot about. And then you have different populations that are vulnerable, seniors and kids. And
So, Ed, just to give a perfect example,
you use a QR code at a restaurant, mm-hmm. and it takes you to Toast or mm-hmm. some website,
yes.
and it's like, oh, you have to log in real quick with your phone number or some information, yep. and suddenly they have some level of info that they can use to yes. potentially get access to other accounts.
Absolutely.
One of the craziest hacks that I remember is somebody who called Amazon mm-hmm. and managed to get Amazon to essentially like add a credit card number to an account. Because they were trying to complete a transaction, then yeah. call back, mm-hmm. use that credit card number to validate themselves to change the email address.
Wow.
And it was like these kind of things that yeah. it's like sometimes the bits of information we don't realize mm-hmm. important to us.
Yes.
I always tell people, like, when you think about credit cards, the last four digits
right.
are actually the most important digits
yes.
that you give away freely. It's yeah. the other numbers that you can find
right.
without just, you can go on the web and search right. the type of credit card you right. have and know the rest
right.
of the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one of the things we were talking earlier about social engineering. Mm-hmm. is that I think that sometimes the folks who are the most attacked, the people who are the most valued, don't mm-hmm. necessarily realize that they're the ones.
Yeah.
And today, you can go on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. Mm-hmm. You put all this information out there on social
yeah.
media.
Yeah.
And then you're looking for, like, these targets that have access. And mm-hmm. I don't mean, like, super secure access mm-hmm. to the most important systems, but access to the people who do.
Yes, that's right. Well, so I did a, when I was at UMBC teaching several years ago, one of the special topics courses I did was insider threat. And so they went through some of the various insider threat types and categories. And one of the categories are employees that are more clerical in their role, but they have access to a lot of information, like data entry. They're the ones on the ground getting lots of data, the name, the addresses, the social security numbers, the other identifiers, etc. They have access to all this information. They're not very well paid, so they end up being really ripe and common targets. And this was like some research that was done out of Carnegie Mellon around, for the ones that got caught, the patterns that they saw allowed them to categorize the insider threats into a few different buckets. And one of those common buckets is that clerical level data entry sort of employee that would get taken advantage of. But, you know, they were a lot of times willing participants as well because
yeah.
it was a side hustle.
A little extra money.
Right. A little extra money to just, you know, you can get access through me. And I do have access to that data.
You know how I think about that? I think of every spy movie I've ever watched
mm-hmm.
in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And almost every one of those spy movies comes, it like starts with somebody stole files from HR.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
the HR department gave all the agents or all the people the payroll information.
Yes. Yep.
And in these movies, of mm-hmm. course, like the HR department's database is in an aquatic lab that's super well protected. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, like, I mean, ORM or yeah. whatever is yeah. the federal agency that handles HR records, it's been
right.
hacked multiple times.
Right.
Yeah. All the agency mm-hmm. records have been mm-hmm. hacked yeah. multiple times.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know, maybe there is like a big old FBI, like, you know, James Bond thing that's going on behind the
yeah.
scenes.
Yeah. Another common quote that you'll probably hear is that the value of data exceeds the value of gold.
Wow.
Right. And so when you think about data as a, you know, in comparison to like rare metals or, you know, precious metals, et cetera, it kind of gives you the idea of what is valuable to adversaries and how they want to get the biggest bang for their buck, right? And how they could use that data. I did just a recent answer talk at like a recent event that I was speaking at. And one of the types of data I mentioned is health data. And health data, unlike financial data, right, the example that I gave is, you know, if you have a credit card that has been somehow compromised, you can call the bank, the credit card company, let them know, hey, I think my card's been compromised, and get a new card and a new number and all of that moving forward. When it comes to your health data, though, it's not like you can do that same kind of call and change stuff up. I'd like to change my blood type, please. Like, I'd like to turn in, you know, diabetes and switch that out for whatever. Not that you would want to make any sort of exchange, but that type of data. And when you start getting in the mind of like adversaries, I think that that's the important part. And even with small business owners, to really understand, I encourage them to put yourself in the seat of an adversary. I know that you think that you wouldn't be a ripe target or that your little business wouldn't be that attractive. But if you wanted to put yourself out of business, just think about that, put that adversary hat on. what would you be targeting and why do you think that would be a value? Just put some thoughts into that. And so I think sometimes the mindset is that individuals or small businesses don't have data that's attractive or that anybody would be targeting. But if you think about the type of data that you're collecting about your customers, like as a business, or if you think of the value of being you as a person, do you have good credit?
Yeah.
You're valuable. Your information is valuable. Somebody can access resources using your identity that they can't access with their own. So you're valuable.
I think that's probably one of the biggest misnomers about all of this is that some of the biggest attackers are foreign entities.
Yes.
Who are, in some cases, third world countries or folks who have access to a computer. And it is more valuable. I mean, and this is a real thing. There are farms, and I say farms as in just hundreds of people in a call center trying to scam. Mm-hmm. And that's their job.
Full-time
job.
Nine to five,
come in and just try to scam you.
That's
all
it.
They do. And when you look at that, like all of us are targets. Everyone is getting a phone call.
Everyone is the target.
And everyone is getting the same text messages that are trying to get you to go buy a gift card.
Yeah.
There was a guy whose entire goal was to get people on a podcast. Don't worry, I won't do this to you, Tina.
Right.
But then he would go through and he would ask just like a quick 5 or 10 questions.
Right.
And those 5 or 10 questions were the most common security questions you would get asked. Like, what was the street that you grew up on?
Right.
You know, what was your first grade teacher?
Right.
What was your first car?
Right.
And they're like freely answering these questions. And it's like, yep, I'm about to go and log in and use all your security questions now. Everybody knows them.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's amazing the things like the information that gets volunteered or shared just freely with just the smallest of incentives, right? Like even when you think about the discount card at the grocery store, we will share address and phone number and whatever information we need because we want to get, you know, that 10% off this grocery, the 25% here, the buy one, get one free. And that's, I love those too, right? But at the same time, when you think about like how that data could be used, even if it's not like an adversary, even these companies with the way now they know all your buying habits, right? I mean, like that data is valuable to them. Like, okay, someone that is a woman about this age that lives in this zip code, we see a pattern that they love to buy Cheerios, right? So we need to make sure that there is an ample supply of Cheerios. Like that's a more innocuous example, but it's insight, it's valuable insight that can be monetized in a lot of different ways, some innocuous and some not so much. Once you share that data.
Well, the sibling, and just to pull on that thread for a little bit more, when you give your address and your phone number at a grocery store or to get a loyalty card at, I don't know, the Gap or something like that, the moment that you do that, it then connects that to your credit cards and to your house address. And then suddenly every person in your house who's ever made a purchase, they're able to connect that. They're able to start to see all the credit and debit cards that have ever been used. And they sell this information.
Oh, yeah.
All this information is the way that sites like Facebook can suddenly tell you things that you've ordered before because all this stuff is being sold and you're packaging it up. I mean, it's difficult because it's so prevalent now.
Yes.
It happens so much now that it's almost impossible to avoid it.
Yeah.
But it makes this whole security thing so much more difficult because so much of your data is already there. Now, on that, I think I want to take a little bit of a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that, like, AI is creating this whole new world of next gen like versions of scams. Some of the things that I've heard quite a bit lately are voice cloning.
Right.
And voice cloning can happen two ways. Is someone might call you, ask you questions, and then they're cloning your voice right there so they could go use it to get into your bank or your Verizon account because it uses voice ID to authenticate you.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you take the voice and you go and scam family members.
Yeah.
It's insane. And I mean, that's just only one of the things I know.
Only one. Yeah. Again, it extends an earlier comment that I made about how valuable it is to be you, right?
Yeah.
A lot of us don't necessarily have the perspective of, I'm not a high government official. I'm not the CEO of a publicly traded conglomerate, you know, whatever, you know, so we can kind of downplay our value. But when you think about exactly what you're saying, like you have a network, you have access to certain account. There are things that resources that are associated with who you are, and someone would jump at the opportunity to be you, to have your face, to have your voice, to tap into whatever it is that they can get access to by imitating you and your voice, your face, your information, et cetera. It is valuable to be you. I think that would be like one big takeaway that I would want people to start thinking about themselves. What are things that I have access to? Like, what value could someone get from being me in all aspects of who you are?
So I like to say that security is a team sport.
Yes.
And security is a team sport because in your office and your work, the things that you do in terms of policy and governance and guidance that you give from a security standpoint, it's because the organization, it just takes one person.
Right.
That one person and suddenly access is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also the same with families. It's the one family member who falls from the Facebook hack, right? Like, it's the one family member who doesn't realize that that's not a real person who's, you know, all their images have been used to create another account and messages them and says that they're an emergency, right?
I think that one of the things is in terms of family, and I've done this for more than one, like, family member or friend, and that's when you even get a router from whatever telecom ISP provider that you're working with to just go in and change the defaults.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Passwords on things. And it doesn't even cross the lay person's mind. Oh, how convenient. I have it right here on the sticker on the router. This is it. Don't really think of how many hands do you think this device went through to get to you? How many people do you think have seen this information? How easy would it be for them to just connect to your network? And then you're going over your family member's house, right? And they're like, oh yeah, here, you can connect. And, you know, I'm like, did you change the default? And they're like, looking at me like, what are you talking about? That's okay. I'm just going to do the hotspot on my phone.
You know, one of my favorite, and I'm using hack in quotes here because it's not really a hack.
Yeah.
One of my favorite hacks of all time was across ATM networks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And what happened is that all these banks installing ATMs did not change the default password for the ATM.
Mm.
And so someone just read the manual, would go up to an ATM, type in the PIN code that was the password, unlock the ATM and tell it things like $20 bills or $1 bills and then just steal money out of the thing.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was that insane.
Simple. Yeah. Same thing with like HVAC installments. So many like HVAC building control system components.
Yeah.
They are more digital and it's internet
IoT,
connected.
Internet of Things.
That's right. And so when you think about your standard HVAC or equivalent professional, they're not typically trained in cybersecurity and the like. And so, yes, they will make sure it is functioning. They'll make sure that it's connected properly and things like that. But if there's any sort of default passwords, in very many cases, they are now internet accessible with default credentials to the HVAC. And if a system network wasn't set up properly and there's connectivity between the network that the HVAC is on and the network that other systems or servers with other data are on, suddenly you have a pretty soft target to attack. And I think that that's why it's really great that I believe that like Howard Community College, for example, is like looking at exposing some of those trades professionals to cybersecurity. And I think it's important as so many disciplines that are not, you know, traditional IT or where cybersecurity would necessarily be thought of as like relevant, that they're starting to incorporate that into the curriculum.
And just to break that down just a little bit, if I know that you have a certain HVAC, an office place, and I can log into that HVAC, and then that possibly gives me certain access to networks or Wi-Fi access and passwords, then suddenly I can start to listen to things on the network. And this HVAC, like, I think what's important to understand is it's someone who's in possibly another country who's looking specifically for signs that that HVAC is on the internet, trying to connect to that HVAC and then using that as a hopping point to then start attacking other things that are on that same network.
That's
right. And this is households, too. The Internet of Things means that, you know, your refrigerator, your washer and dryer, your stereo, all of these things. And here's the most frightening part.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're thinking about whether you updated your dishwasher, but if your dishwasher has a security vulnerability and hasn't been updated and is connected to your Wi-Fi network, now it's what we call a vector of attack.
Yeah, that's. I was just having this conversation with another colleague earlier today. I was like, I want dumb stuff in my house. The only smart things in the house I want to be are the people who live in our household. I mean, yes, you know, to an extent, I don't think you can buy a TV now that's not smart, right? And so certainly there are some smart devices, but yeah, I want a dumb washer, a dumb dryer. I want, you know, a non-smart refrigerator. And the same colleague was talking to me about how there's AI now being incorporated in some of these devices. Like, just press the buttons, y'all. Like, really? Like, yeah, just kind of going a bit overboard with regard to, like, the technology and not recognizing the risk.
Well, speaking of data, we have to wrap up soon, but speaking of data real quick with televisions, it's one of the most frightening things that has happened in a long time. And if you're wondering why your TV is so cheap, it's because you're not actually buying your TV anymore. You're selling your data. And any TV that is internet connected does regular captures of everything you're watching, and kind of like the Nielsen ratings, it sells what you're watching so that it can use that information so that they can sell advertising to you.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what it is. You can take something from your phone and put it on your television. They know what it is. It's being recorded and sent back to a server. The number one thing I would tell everybody is if you buy a TV, you better turn off every single internet feature. My preference is, you know, and privacy becomes complicated no matter how you deal with it. But I use like an Apple TV set box.
Okay, yeah.
And turn off all of my TV features because I at least feel like I know there's some stuff happening
better
over
control.
Here, but it's not as bad as I know that like a Vizio or some other company is at selling all of my data.
Yeah.
And again, it has gotten to the point where they make so much money off your data, it is almost impossible to buy a TV that is not internet-enabled.
Oh, yeah.
And the ones that are not internet-enabled are actually more expensive because they don't make the money off the data.
Yeah.
It's frightening.
Yeah,
it's weird.
It is. I am all in the privacy settings. Of course, when the TV, you get it, they're not directing you there.
Yeah.
Please go and check the privacy settings to see if you're in agreement. And all the apps that you have loaded, they all have their own... You know, for my son, you know, I'm looking at, why is Netflix telling me what he's watching?
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. Okay. I was thinking that you all did a certain amount of default for children stuff, but no. I'm sitting here with him. I see what he's watching. Thank you. Yeah. Privacy and cybersecurity, it's like they overlap. When it comes to confidentiality, they diverge in other regards. But with regard to confidentiality, privacy and cybersecurity are often in sync, but diverge in other ways.
I think the words that you've used, it's really kind of this thing of just value yourself.
Yes.
Like, just keep in mind that you are so valuable that there are people who are just doing everything they can to just get little hints and bits about what you are and what you do. And that data, that you, like as you said, you were worth more money and value than you realize.
Yes. And just to that point, I would like to also emphasize that about your children. People, their children are born and they're like John Christopher Lucas, right? And born November 15th, 2024. You have put in Columbia, Maryland, you have put their full name, their date of birth, where they were born. They know you as parent name. You probably somewhere in your profile changed your LinkedIn or Facebook. And so they know your maiden name. You were
full blast.
Right. Full blast. Like, that is valuable information as well. You already have parents that would create credit cards in their children's name. And they're, you know, a child's got bad credit and they're not even.
I'm sorry, kids. I apologize.
Right.
Y'all were all in full blast. And you know what? I know better. But just to take it just a step further, I think this has changed. but social security numbers are generated based off all the information that you just said. It is a formula, and that if you know those things, mm-hmm. you can usually get within a pretty tight range of someone's social security number.
Yeah,
if
just
you know,
by
having those pieces of information. Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly you're in a like a OPSEC, like sort of operational security, where like, you know, the data by itself is not classified. It's unclassified. But when you start like adding in a bunch of the other pieces of information, right? We know that this meeting is taking place here. And okay, so then if we go over here, somebody's talking about they're getting in town early because they want to do some sightseeing. Okay, we know this person has this position.
Yeah.
Like you start lining up and suddenly all of these just small pieces of information that by themselves don't mean anything. But when you put it together, it's very revealing.
And we do have to wrap. There's a term called, I think it's called CUI. It's when information on its own is not confidential. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But when you take it in mm-hmm, aggregate mm-hmm, and you put it together, mm-hmm, suddenly mm-hmm. it becomes confidential mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. you can piece it together like a puzzle. All right. So I got a closing question for you.
I mean,
obviously, just from our conversation, you've been at this at a long time. You live and breathe security. You understand privacy. And we're moving into this new era of AI. We're looking at scams and phishing and attacks happening in a way that is just like a whole new world. It's this idea of quantum and Q-Day, which,
I mean,
we talked a little bit about that in another episode.
Yeah.
But so I'm just wondering, if you were talking to family or businesses or people, what would you want listeners here to walk away with and just immediately think, like, this is what I can start doing to prepare myself or start changing about what I do on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is having an awareness of, like we said, who you are, how your data, how you, just your face, your voice, your everything about you can be valuable to somebody. Start thinking through that lens, what they could do by being you, by having access to things that you have access to. That's one of the things that I would say. The other thing is just make sure, like, look and think twice, right? It's like the campaign was Stop, Think, Connect. And I think that rings ever more true now. Stop, pause before you click, pause before you give that money to who you think it is, pause before you accept that connection when you're pretty sure you already connected to that person on Facebook, pause and go see if you're connected, call them on a trusted number and ask them, did you set up a new account? And then proceed. So yeah. I think that would be my kind of cautionary thing. Don't just take things at face value. You've got to take the extra step. It's inconvenient, but take the extra step.
So you're valuable and trust but verify, right?
Yes. Yeah. Not even trust. Shoot. Don't even trust. You just got to.
Oh, sorry.
You just got to verify. Right.
Skip to verify.
Right. Skip to verify. That's right.
Tina, it was wonderful having you on the podcast. Tina is the founder and CEO of SideDeploy and T-Secure. So make sure you check out our website, SideDeploy, as well as T-Secure will be in the podcast notes. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Jason.
Before we go, on December 20th, a power outage knocked out more than a third of San Francisco's electricity, and Waymo, one of my favorite self-driving cars, had absolutely no idea what to do. With all the traffic lights dark, you could find on social media videos of autonomous vehicles, Waymos, stopped in intersections, pulled over to the side of the road, trying to make sense of what do they do in this confusion. Waymo said the cars actually performed better than it appeared that they did, but out of caution, they pushed out some software updates to make sure that it could handle these situations better. It was a bad 2 weeks because right after that, a big weather storm came through San Francisco and shut down the fleet once again. But here's the thing. The challenge with AI and autonomous systems isn't the situations that they're trained for, it's the ones that they aren't. And no matter how much we try, you can't train for everything. And that's the real unleash that we're starting to see with artificial intelligence. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and that's it for this week. All the links are in the show notes, including the link to my bi-weekly newsletter. If you got thoughts on today's show, questions, or ideas for future episodes, you can click the microphone in the WYPR app or leave a message on my website at www.jasonimperi.com. New episodes drop every other Wednesday, And we've got some great conversations lined up. Also, keep your eyes out for that special edition episode about the Consumer Electronics Show. I'll be sharing a few things that caught my eye, some conversations I've had with people while I'm here, and we'll have a whole lot more about technology and what's happening. Thanks for the team at WYPR, producers Sam Vermes-Dawes, Shania Mapson, and Perry Labs Head of Operations and Marketing, Myrna Martinez. I'm Jason Michael Perry. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time.